So each person needs to choose what's right for them right now. You might be in a space where you could use some pushing and maybe a kick in the butt. Okay, great. Or could you use some nurturing, some self-care? Look at your nutrition, your physical exercise, your sleep, your relationships. Could you use some more nurturing?
When personal triumphs meet professional excellence, how do we navigate the tough conversations that lead to our greatest growth? Welcome to Seek, Go, Create, where today's guest, David Wood, brings a wealth of experience from both his personal journey and his professional ascent to becoming a leading figure in the coaching industry. David is a former consulting actuary turned master coach who traded his Park Avenue job for the adventure of building the world's largest coaching business. David has climbed to the top of Google as the go-to for life coaching, impacting over 150,000 coaches and individuals across the globe. Despite personal adversities and professional challenges, he has emerged as a leader in transforming lives through the art of mastering tough conversations. David, welcome to Seek, Go, Create.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
I'm glad you're here. And let's start off with, if someone asks you what you do, what do you tell people? I gave you a great bio. I gave sort of a great bio there, but if someone asks you what you do, what do you tell them? You're just out and about.
I help business owners to double their revenue, their time off, and their happiness.
And how do people respond when you tell them that? What if they're not a business owner? What do they say? Ooh.
Yeah, if they're not a business owner, they go, oh, cool.
And if they are a business owner, their response is, tell me more?
Usually they're curious. They're like, oh, because it's an unusual mix. I mean, everyone wants to start with more money, generally. I find people come in who doesn't want more money. But if that's all they want, I usually suggest that they go and find someone else. There are plenty of people who'll help you with revenue alone. Due to my unique background, I cover business and the life aspects. So when you want a generalist who can help put all the pieces together, that's usually where I come in.
So how did one, that was kind of one of the most fascinating things when I was just reading up on your background and all, how did one marry those two unique backgrounds? Because typically people that are good with numbers and the spreadsheets, the charts and all of those things, they aren't necessarily skilled in communications and leadership and things like that. This probably is a little bit of your background story and goes into your professional career, but how did those two start coming together for you? Was that you started that way, or has that been just part of your journey?
No, it came in two stages. So the natural one for me, the first one was the left brain. I had a tragedy when I was 7 years old. And apparently one trauma response that people learn is to shut down feelings. Now, the upside might have been that I developed a lot of left brain capacity and I came top of my school. I got paid to go to college and then I landed a really great job with a consulting firm and then got transferred to Park Avenue at the age of 23 to consult to Ford and Sony Music and Chanel. That was the first half of my life, and I got really good at business, numbers, systems, and money. But fortunately, I wasn't happy, and someone spotted it and suggested I go into a personal growth program. And I nearly didn't do it because they all smiled way too much, and they wore name tags. And I'm like, this is some cult, hippie, weird thing. And I'd always thought of self-help as weak-willed people who couldn't think for themselves. Fortunately, they were ready for my arrogance and my left brain, and they cracked my cynicism and they cracked my heart open. And I discovered that I knew nothing about emotional intelligence, vulnerability, integrity, leadership, authenticity. And I got hooked. I'm like, all right, I got to catch up. So the second half of my life, the last quarter of a century, has been doing my own therapy, sitting with gurus, doing crazy human experiments to kind of push the limits, lean into my fears. And I know you're supposed to specialize. And I teach that. Yes, specialize, pick a lane. But I finally surrendered to the fact that I can help someone with their hiring system and their productivity in the first half of a session. And then we might be talking about the meaning of life or a fight they had with their kids or their legacy in the second part of it.
So I need to go back a second because I keep wanting to move forward, but you mentioned an event that occurred that sort of shut down part of your brain, and it's a trauma. And I think many people, part of their journey is they've gone through some type of event. I call it a catalytic event in what I do that has changed the way they think, changed the way they define the world, success, people around them, something like that. Can you give me a little bit more about what occurred there just so that it kind of sets the stage for some of this conversation we're going to have?
Sure. And I just want to warn listeners, it's not pretty. My little sister and I got off the school bus and somehow she ended up underneath the bus and was killed that day. And I was there and witnessed it. And back then, I don't think therapy was a big thing, not in Australia. You didn't send kids there and I didn't even go to the funeral. So it wasn't until I just grew up. All right, this is my life. And it wasn't until I was 23 and I was having trouble in relationship that I finally went to a psychiatrist and said, what is going on? And he said, well, I've just met you, but my initial hypothesis is that you didn't grieve properly and you are sensitive. And I think I can help you reclaim some of that emotional side and go and move through that process in a healthy way. And he was spot on. I don't know that I'm done. Like 25 years later, I think I'm still grieving and it still comes up now and then. And I cry at every movie or even a commercial that's got a sense of loss. But that, I think that explains why I was more of a cardboard cutout for the first half of my life. And then when I discovered authentic relating and real revealed communication and vulnerability, I was hooked. I'm like, give me more of this. And so my life, I would say my life is mainly about that. It's mainly about being real, being expressed, and having deep connections. I just happen to do the business coaching because I'm good at it. And that pays the bills and business owners can justify the expense. Oh, well, I'm making money. Everything I do now on the personal side with David is basically free. So that's how it ended up.
And since you work with so many people, I've observed this myself, you in all likelihood see similar situations, traits, personalities in others. How common is it? Not the exact situation, obviously, it's a very tragic situation. It's interesting when you brought that up. I was reminded of a cousin who had a cousin, not a family member, but a family member, that it was a very similar situation. They grew up in Mississippi and the older brother got off the bus. The younger sister, the bus started and she was killed in an accident like that.
Wow.
And I know that his name was Donald. I just recalled his name. It's been a while since I've talked to him. I know that Donald, it impacted him greatly. He was the older brother. I think he had this thought of, I should have protected. What did I do? Why was I leaving for all these type things and all that? So
yep.
We don't have to unpack a lot of that, but I guess my question is, how common are situations that you see in people you coach? I mean, we know that there's no perfect person out there. Everyone's gone through stuff, but I mean, I guess just talk in general about what you see with leaders, business owners, just people that you work with related to traumatic events?
Well, I think I want to split this into two answers. The first, I notice more of that in my friends because healers, we're all healing ourselves. And so a lot of my friends have got this some kind of traumatic event, whether it's some kind of abuse or loss or something. So I'm present to that. in my clients, I have a theory that all of us carry some kind of trauma. I don't know much about pre-birth trauma, but I've got a friend who specializes in that. Just coming out of the womb apparently is going to do something to you. And then there's going to be a time when you didn't get your needs met and you felt alone or abandoned or someone left you. So I think we've all got our own version of something from the past. Some of us it might be quite mild. For others, it's going to follow us maybe all our days in some way, and we learn to adapt.
Hello, Seek, Go, Create listeners. This is Tim Wenders. Let's take a short break. Have you ever caught yourself dreaming about a future where your leadership not only achieves its goals, but also inspires those around you? As an executive coach, I specialize in transforming those dreams into achievable visions. With my coaching, we don't just chase goals, we create legacies. Drawing from my own experiences and a faith-driven approach, I help you align your professional ambitions with your deepest values, ensuring a journey that is both successful and fulfilling. If you're ready to carve a path that is authentically yours, it's time for us to talk. Visit timwenders.com/coaching to schedule a free discovery coaching call. Yes, you and I'll just get on the phone and have a call. Again, that's timwenders.com/coaching, and you could read some more information and then schedule a call right on my calendar. Let's turn your vision into reality. Now back to Seek, Go, Create. As someone who is, I think I see a title at times, you've got business coach, but you also have life coach. And I've noticed in our industry, the coaching industry, there are many people that have that life coach tag that sometimes I think they're skirting the counseling role, which is not a bad thing. I see it come up quite often with me. I mean, I think I see people go different paths. There's some people that need some spiritual healing, and with a background in ministry and all of that, I'm keenly aware of that. I think some people need obviously some counseling, and then some people, maybe we can tie it all together. Yeah. But where do you, I guess, where do you draw a line between, okay, this is a little bit outside of my scope. This is someone who needs a much deeper emotional counseling role than I can provide. Or do you go into that? I mean, I don't know if you're licensed or anything like that. I don't even know if that question makes sense, but you know some of this, it gets watered down a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the answer is both. You know, I'm not trained as a therapist or a counselor, and I've been coaching for 25 years, and I've done a lot of my own work. So I'm able to hold space for a lot of deep emotion. And I've got corporate clients, I specialize in business owners, but I coach some executives, and I tell them, look, there may be tears. There may be my tears. There may be yours. Everything's welcome. It's usually got to be pretty extreme before I refuse to coach them and say, look, this is not my area. For example, when I was first starting out, there was a woman who had visions of cutting herself with sharp metal objects. I'm like, okay, thank you for being clear. That's not my area. I don't know how to handle that. I've had a client recently who's also a friend, and she just wasn't really up for being a business owner. There's so much healing to be done. And with me isn't the most efficient place to do that. I do 30-minute sessions. We dive in, boom, 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 boom. You got actions, off you go. I said, I think you really need to find a healer. And then maybe a year from now, when you feel more resilient, more robust, you can come back to coaching. But that's pretty rare that I say to someone. Sometimes I've said, I encourage you to get therapy in conjunction with coaching. And I've got more than one client who, they have a therapist, they got me, and they sometimes bounce things off both of us. And I often say, I like this guy. I like your therapist. He's saying some really smart stuff. So I like to think of it as more of a collaboration. And I understand, and I totally respect if some coaches, including life coaches, go, I'm not going to go there. If it's deep emotional stuff, I'm not going to handle it. It's just, I've been through so much of it myself. I'm happy to at least hold space for some of these things. And if they need more support, great. Go and maybe put the coaching on pause and go and get some therapy. Or if your therapist is okay with it, we can work together.
I do think I enjoy this coach role, because what it does is it fosters some deeper communications than a lot of us have. And it allows for things like you just brought up. David, one thing I'm intrigued by, you brought up this word earlier, so I want to kind of circle back to it. And that's, you've realized that in a world that everyone is told to niche down, be specific, be very unique, that you're more of a generalist. I have felt the same way, and I sometimes wrestle with that. I think you said you've come to terms with it, but talk a little bit about that journey. I think I saw somewhere, you've done some acting, you've done some things in Hollywood and all that. Give just a little bit of background to show whatever you'd like that, yeah, you've got a generalist heart, and it keeps leading you in places that a lot of us would go, ooh, that's kind of different. Ooh, that's unique. Boy, David, you're going all over the place. Give some examples.
Well, the generalist heart, I think, comes from all the business background and then all the emotional work and the self-growth and the quest that I've been on. I think that's why. But a psychiatrist told me I'm counterphobic. And I hadn't heard that word before, but as soon as he said it, I started looking, and it was like, yeah, I'm afraid of abandonment, so I've experimented with open relationships and polyamory. It took me a few years to realize I'm scared of heights. I mean, yeah, you put me up 2,000 feet above the ground, hanging from a paraglider, I'm terrified. But it just didn't occur to me for what. Until he said that, oh yeah, I'm scared of heights, and so I fly. I'm scared of, well, crowds, really. So getting on stage is an edge for me. And acting, oh my God. I don't mind so much being in front of the camera, because if you mess it up, okay, the director might be annoyed and maybe you don't get another gig and there might be something riding on it, particularly if it's $1 million budget for a 30-second commercial. But you can do it again. But you walk out on stage in front of an audience to do a play, or even a scene from a play, an acting class in a professional theater. Oh my God, the adrenaline coursing through me. So I think that gives me the credibility to help people face their fears, because I've faced so many of them, and I understand what it's like to have your heart pounding in your throat. I went and played guitar and sang in pubs, and I have a pretty bad singing voice. I did that for a year and a half because I wanted to see if I could do it. And then the acting thing, I've been thinking about it for years. And then someone said to me, I did that. I went to LA and I did the acting. And a week later, she called me and said, do you want to come to an audition with me? They're doing a production of Dracula. And I said, well, I thought I'd maybe take a class first, but all right, I'll go. And I landed the lead. They gave me the role of Dracula in this play. And so one thing led to another. I'm like, I think I need to move to LA to at least find out what I can do in a year. So I did that, and I'm glad the experiment is over. It was very successful, and I'm much happier now hanging out in North Carolina. So I don't know that that makes me a generalist, but colorful might be a better word. I will dive into new things that I have no idea how to do. And I like to obsess about getting better. I like to obsess like what's the fastest way to get there? I'm a nerd that way. And I think that really helps with my coaching, because they might have a good plan, but what if we could do that in half the time with half the effort? Let's try that.
So one of the things, similar, maybe different experiences, but similar, and there are three things that I've wondered about myself. So I'll say this and then ask it as a question, sort of related to not really the generalist, but maybe just a lot of experiences. I think you and I have probably seen people, this is very common in the world, they go into a role we'll call it a title, and they'll be there for a good portion of their life. And I'm not really judging that. That's fine. In fact, sometimes I admire those people greatly because that's not me. That's not my journey. But I've wondered about myself. Number one, do I just get bored easily? Number two, do I just love the thought of overcoming, you mentioned fear, or overcoming not knowing something or a challenge or something? And then number three, I've wondered if I'm trying to prove something, if I'm just like, there's something that I need to prove either to myself or to other people. And so those are the things that I've kind of gone through in my process. When I mention any of those three, do any of those jump out at you? Do they mean anything?
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Okay.
A lot comes up. I love this question. I used to look down on, and maybe I still have judgments about it, but I used to look down on people who weren't doing big things. I'd call a friend from high school and say, hey, what's new? Oh, nothing. Same old, the last 10 years. And I didn't understand that. But as I've gotten older and gotten to see it from a different point of view, I've realized I've always gone for the big thing, gone for speaking on big stages and publishing a book and becoming a snowboard instructor when I couldn't really snowboard, and then flying the Himalayas in a paraglider and trying to build the world's largest coaching business and becoming number one on Google for life coaching. Like, I like big, go to LA and be an actor. And my friends love it. They're like, man, can't wait to see the next chapter. But Byron Katie is a teacher I follow and love dearly. And I quote her often. And one of the things she said is she speaks about ordinary angels. And so I think those friends from school who said nothing's changed, one of them told me the best moment of his day is cracking a beer at 5 o'clock, sitting out in his yard, looking at the mountain, his kids playing around his feet. And I realized they've got something that I don't have. And Katie was right about being ordinary angels. And she said to me once, watch the specialness, because specialness can be deadly. And my ego's, I want to be special, and I want to be loved. I want to do things bigger and better. But with age, I'm 55 now, I finally realized I want to settle in Asheville for the rest of my life. I want to have a home base here. I'm done with all the traveling and the festivals and the different things. I don't like to travel. I like having a quiet place to sleep. I like having my dog and my house and my friends, my regular cup of tea, and my new ventures I just discovered because I needed something to throw myself into, because I'm not very good left to my own devices and choices. I've just discovered pickleball. And until 2.5 months ago, I hadn't even seen a game on TV, and I thought it was like T-ball. And to be honest, I'm not even sure what T-ball is. So I finally discovered this, and now this is my latest. I'm training like 6 out of 7 days, and I love getting better, and I love getting out there and being with people, and I'm happy. Plus, I'm starting to host. This is new for me, is to host things, because I've been a bit of a hermit a lot. And now I host people at my house 3 times a month and just hosted my first public pickleball event. So that's fun. And I got this suspicion that the real joy comes in a lot of the smaller packages.
The cool thing about this conversation is that I've gone through similar journeys. And that is, I wanted in my circle, whatever that circle is, to be the one that was always pushing forward, the one that was always pushing, pulling, stretching, whatever words you want to use, even so much so that I don't really watch TV. We keep a screensaver on our YouTube channel here, and a commercial will come on for Lazy Boy, and it'll show these people that are fighting for their rights to sit in their lazy boy chair. And I find myself with this irritation at this relaxation that people are having. And I really would rather not judge, but I do. But it's fascinating. Yeah. I do want to tell you, I started playing pickleball about a year and a half ago. Just left a place in Arizona where we were wintering, where they've got 32 pickleball courts. It's like a mecca. And pickleball is very cultish. Be very cautious. You probably have already seen it. It is very, very easy to be sucked into a life that it is 24/7 for people. But I enjoy it. I'm 60 and it's great. It is a great sport for people of all ages, but it's social, it's competitive, but it's also something that almost anyone can do, which is kind of democratized. Is that the right word? Is that what you see?
Well, I played mainly solo sports, like squash was my sport, kind of similar to racquetball. And I wouldn't have even found pickleball if there was a squash court in Nashville, but there is no squash court in Nashville. But I'm stunned by the availability, like 7 free courts and one website where everyone coordinates their social play, because that's what was missing for me. Say with tennis, I didn't know 4 to 8, 16 people that I could get together. And now with pickleball, you don't have to. There's one website worldwide where we go and coordinate. So I can just look at the map each day and go, oh, that's where it's on. All right, where am I going to get my fix today? And I like that there are 16, 20, 30 people all rotating in, and I'm starting to find people I actually like, because it's not where I'd normally source my friends, but there are some people with nice energy and I'm already hooked. And my ego is fully at work because I want to see how fast. My question was, how fast can I go from beginner to 4.5 rating? And I think I've been playing 6 weeks now with my right arm and I'm up to 4.0. I'm on track. And then at some point, hopefully I'll chill. But I like to learn and develop and train. So I'll drill 3 to 4 times a week. And I'm the one setting up all the drill sessions because that's fun for me. But it's also fun to just get out and just, I haven't taken beer. I took a beer to the court. But I think we should get there 4 to 6 in the afternoon and someone should have a small cooler and we just have some social games and doesn't really matter what happens. So I like both of those aspects. But I think that training thing, like that question I said before, what's the fastest way to get here? That's often what we're asking in the coaching questions. What's the fastest way for you to double your revenue in a way that's enjoyable for you? What's the fastest way to get from 40 hours a week to 20? How do we do that? So I think that drive serves me when it comes to coaching.
So one thing that I'm asking, and I'll kind of pose it to you, is I do think there are times that we are to pursue things with all vigor, I'll say it that way, like you're doing with pickleball. And then there are times that we're to go at a maybe more measured, relaxed pace. And I will say, this is a new thing for me. Maybe it's age, maybe it's maturity, maybe it's life experience. I don't know, because I haven't always been this way. I mean, I've told the audience before, I used to pride myself back in the 90s on sleeping an average of 3 to 4 hours a night and constant hustle mode. I'm thinking a little differently now. And I'm actually thinking that as I work with people, I'm even asking questions like that. What are your thoughts on the balance between hustle, hustle, go, 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 pursue with all vigor, and then let's just step back and relax and see what comes to us, or allow some time, or to be a little more patient? Did that make sense?
Well, you know, careful, careful, Tim, because you might end up talking yourself into a lazy chair.
I don't think I could fit a lazy boy here in the RV, but maybe somehow I could get a lazy boy.
Yeah. Well, they're two poles, right? So there's some real polarity there. There's the yin and the yang. And I think that question's age old. The people who come to me are usually wanting to make something happen in time and space. So they're usually wanting more. And so that's often where the coaching will live. But if someone's always at that full speed, then they're probably going to burn out and it's not sustainable. So it's probably not the most efficient way to get there. I want to come at it from another angle. I used to be the spiritual warrior. If it's difficult, I'm doing it. And open relationships was an example. It traumatized me over and over and over again. But theoretically, I'm like, why not love more than one person? I can handle this. Just suck it up. And then I had massive insomnia because of that. And I refused to take any medication for a year because I wanted to see if I could do that. And I was kind of white knuckling it. And I think there was value in that. But then it got to a point where a doctor friend of mine was begging me to take something so my brain could come back into balance. And I had to learn the hard way because I went into deep depression and anxiety, which is one of the most rotten cocktails on the planet, to have depression and anxiety at the same time. So you can't really relax and you can't really sleep, but you want energy all the time. And I learned the lesson of balance through that. Okay, there are times to be the spiritual warrior and push and say, I'm not going to accept no, and I am absolutely committed and I'm going to show up like that. That's great. But you got to know when to say, okay, too much. My body can't handle it, or my nervous system can't handle that, or I need some R&R as well. Or you know what? Oh, here's my favorite line that I think I came up with. I sometimes find myself saying, I'm not tall enough for this ride. You know those signs at the carnival? You got to be this tall. Some things like I'm dating a woman right now. I'm honestly not sure if I'm tall enough for this ride because there are some challenges for my psyche. I love her and it's great, but I don't know. But I've learned to say, I can't promise anything and I don't know, but let's keep hanging out and see what happens. And if it becomes too much, I trust my body will know and I might have to take a step back. That's new for me. Well, in the past 10 years, that's new. Before that, it'd be like, yes, of course, we're going for it. Dive in. Let's jump off the cliff. Who's with me? So each person needs to choose what's right for them right now. You might be in a space where you could use some pushing and maybe a kick in the butt. Okay, great. Or could you use some nurturing, some self-care? Look at your nutrition, your physical exercise, your sleep, your relationships. Could you use some more nurturing?
One of the things that just jumped at me while you were saying that was the importance of being self-aware. And I was one physically, from a physical standpoint, I used to convince myself, and I guess I could do this, that I could push physically to do a new sport, to do something that might be challenging. And I think I mentioned earlier, I just turned 60 this year. And this last year, this last 12 months, I've had two situations where I had a slight injury, no big deal or anything. One was related to pickleball, by the way. I fell and landed on my wrist, which was not exciting at all. Dear.
I'm still recovering from a wrist sprain from falling on my butt.
I know. Pickleball is unfortunately, it is somewhat dangerous for people, but we won't get into that. But yeah. What I noticed, David, I would typically get up, shake it off, and power through. But something in me, and I don't know if it was wisdom, self-awareness, I was hurting so bad, I don't know. Something said, let your body rest. Be patient. Get a lazy boy, maybe. I don't have one, but, and rest. And you know what? Both times it took right at 6 weeks. I kept up with it. I monitored. I tracked it. I'm an engineer, so I've kind of got this left brain, right brain thing going too. I'm an industrial and systems engineer, so I'm like keeping up with, okay, what's my level of pain? Where am I at? What's going on now? And so I got to the place where, okay, I feel like I'm healed. And they both took about 6 weeks, which I know that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it would have been, you know, 6 days, 60 minutes, something like that. How important in all of this that we're talking about, this goes back to, I think, EQ that you brought up earlier, is self-awareness. And I know as a coach, you and I would say, that's why everybody needs a coach, but just talk general self-awareness, and then we might can go into why bringing someone in helps. But see, I think someone needs to be self-aware even to ask for a coach. I mean, they won't even make that leap. A lot of people out there by themselves. So self-awareness, how important is that?
It's such a difficult topic to speak about, because I had a client say to me this week, he said, well, I'm conscious of that. I'm doing that. And I said, well, hang on. You're conscious of what you're conscious of, but you don't see what you don't see. So how do you know how aware you are when it comes to this? This was on the topic of checking in to see if people are still listening and still interested. And he said, oh, yeah, I'm aware of it. I'm thinking, I don't think you are, but you can't see your own limitations. If I said to you, hey, I know a course that's about $1,000 and 3 full long days, and it's probably going to increase your self-awareness by at least 20%. Some people say, that's a great deal. That's a great deal. I'm going to do it. If they value that, which I think everyone should, but some people go, 3 full days, $1,000. I don't need that. But if I said, I'll give you $1,000 and take away 20% of your self-awareness, would you go for that? No one in their right mind would go for that. The things you finally learned about yourself, I do this, this is a limitation, I tend to talk too much, I'm arrogant. You got to know that stuff so that you can relate with people and spot your limitations. So I think it's crucial, but I don't really know how to have people value it and seek it. And I think coaching is one way to become more aware, because you can get feedback. But if you're not listening, or your ego, your self-defenses are so strong, you're not going to hear a bunch of it anyway. I personally, the strongest thing I've found to crack through people's defenses and help them see things they never saw about themselves is that course that I originally did back in 1996. I still send people to it, my family, my clients. It's called the Landmark Forum by Landmark Education. And they've dialed something in. Like, the idea is that you pop and you see stuff you never saw before through all the interactions with all these other crazy people. But you may not see it in yourself, but you see it in someone else and go, that's me. That's what I do. Now, if you're not self-aware, think of a friend. Think of, not even a friend, think of an acquaintance who's kind of bumbling around through the world and has no idea that they get people offside, or they have no idea that they talk way too much, or they think they're super responsible and they're completely deluded. Well, we all have some of that, but you're not going to know it until you do. So are you going to invest time, money, energy into trying to learn more? I've been on this path since 96 when I did that course. I got hooked. And so I've gone and sat with teachers and done courses and done things to try and see what I wasn't seeing. And I've been doing that for 25 years. I know other people, it's their full-time job. They want to wake up. They want to be enlightened. I'm not that hardcore. I want to have fun playing pickleball and have fun with my friends. And it's more of a, I like hanging out with the people who are on that path now. And we, like I say, I'm not hardcore about it, but 3 times a month I have people at my house and we sit and do a process called circling, where you speak about what's real for you right now. Right now, I'm feeling nervous. Right now, I feel attracted to you and I don't want to say it. Right now, this, and we do that for an hour and a bit. And I don't consider that hardcore anymore. That's just life. That's just a lifestyle. But each time, ideally, I'm going to learn something about, I'll reveal something and people ask questions, and then it's kind of like therapy on steroids. I'm a big fan of self-awareness. I don't know. I wish I could get everybody in the world excited about doubling their self-awareness. Things would change pretty quickly if we could do that. I don't know yet how to do it.
Yeah, you mentioned people that are hardcore, and I think I've observed, and I think I was this way at one point, I was somewhat addicted to, this is a general term, but self-improvement. And I love what you brought up, because now I believe that I have just integrated improvement and being better into my lifestyle, into my regular life. It sounds like that's kind of what you're doing. Because pickleball, you said you want to enjoy pickleball, but see, that's part of it. That's part of, I think, that process and journey. So I like that. One of the things that I've heard you, I think I've heard you use this word twice, and that's the word arrogant. You've kind of used it to describe a portion of yourself, and I have used that to describe myself also. And I think if we were to take most business leaders, people that have done great things, we may have some degree of arrogance, confidence. We could kind of maybe interchange a few words there. But how does one discern, determine, be aware of the difference between healthy arrogance and unhealthy arrogance? Because I believe there's times in my life where it's been healthy. It got me to places that I would not have gotten to otherwise. And then there's times I think it blinded me to being self-aware about something I needed to be more aware of. So any comments on that?
I'm going to look up the definition of arrogance.
Okay.
And I'm flashing back now to 2007 when I sat with this guru, and he said all these things to me, and then he said, but what's your arrogance? And I said, what do you mean? And what does that mean? And he just said, look it up. So I'm looking it up. Arrogance is overbearing pride or haughtiness. Attitude of superiority manifested in an overbearing manner or in presumptuous claims or assumptions. So you said healthy arrogance. I would maybe use the word confidence versus arrogance. So you can be confident, like, hey, yeah, I'm really good at this. Okay, that's fine. I don't think that's arrogant. But I tend to be biased towards assuming that I'm right, when I may not have checked it out. I may not even be looking to find out. And I'm just like, this is right. And then I find out I'm wrong. I'm often assuming I'm the smartest person in the room. And that may be true in a bunch of rooms, but there's going to be rooms where it's not. And so I like this bit about presumptuous claims or assumptions, right? And one of the key tenets of authentic relating is to assume nothing. So we start in our circling, we speak in different language. We say things like, it seems to me. I couldn't say, why are you sad? Because now I'm making an assumption that you're sad. I see tears streaming down your face, and I see you're scrunched up and your shoulders seem a little tense. It seems to me that you're sad. Is that true? We actually get to practice dropping the arrogance and the assumptions and the being right. And say, we say things like, I have a story. I have a story that you did this because of that. Is that true? It's a good practice to check arrogance. So I would say arrogance versus confidence. Confidence is great. Arrogance might be you're making assumptions. And then the overbearing thing, that can be quite annoying. There's a pickleball guy who I'm told knows a lot about the game, but I can't stand him telling me what to do. There's a way he says it, like a school headmaster or something, that just gets my back up. And he might be right. I don't want to hear it. It's quite overbearing in the way it's done. Humility is probably still one of my life lessons. And the universe, I think, has given me plenty of chances to learn humility. Maybe I just have to pay attention.
I think life, as we go along the way, I love what you said about the Landmark Forum that you send people to kind of help them get to this. My experience has been there's two ways that people make, I will say, significant change. And I don't know, this is theoretical. This isn't hard to prove it out. It's just my experience. One is they make a decision and they go through process like you talked about, or like we just were discussing, life deals them some event, some catalytic event that forces them to make some change. I know a lot of this. I know a lot of these things too. My biggest changes have typically occurred when there's some form of a catalytic event, one outside my control. The 2008 downturn showed me that I wasn't always the smartest person in the room where I thought that I was, and I was a business person and things like that. So that was interesting. And so I like that we're tying this together. One of the things, David, that comes out of what you do is a lot of, I'll call it practical, but let's just call it communication skills. And I like where we've gone with the conversation, because if we were just to talk about communication technique, I think it's just that, technique. But to me, I'll go back to the arrogance thing. I notice when I am fatigued and tired, I will slip back into believing and using tones that come across as I'm a know-it-all. I would be like the guy on the pickleball court. If I'm tired and not well rested and not sitting in the lazy boy, but if I am not resting well. And so what I'd love to do in the last couple minutes we have here is what can you tell us now, as we've led to talking about a lot of big picture things, to the practical, difficult conversations that people have in this world? Because I don't think a lot of people are having them. I think a lot of people are shirking them. They're avoiding them. A lot of it could be because of some of the things we've been talking about. But just in a couple minutes, I'm going to ask you to give us a quick mini communications seminar, anything that you want to share on that after the conversation we've had.
Well, that's a big question. And if we had more time, I'd love to get into it. And I think if you're up for round two, I'd be happy to do that sometime, because it's a whole big topic in and of itself. I think whatever I say is going to come across as a tease. But I will say, I wasn't taught growing up that it was okay to say what was really happening for me. I wasn't even taught to take a look and work out, what am I feeling? What's happening in my body? What's going on? So there's so much I think many of us have learned to bury. We don't even, you mentioned self-awareness. I wrote a book called Mouse in the Room, which is about firstly identifying what's going on for you. What am I feeling? Why am I resentful? What do I want? That's a win, just that you know it. And then secondly, if we did know that, saying it to someone else can be quite scary. What if they have feelings? What if they leave us? What if there's some consequence? What if I have to deal with all this emotional red tape now? What if I step on a landmine because I'm not really trained in this? So I understand why, I think I understand. See, there's the arrogance. I think I understand why we generally shy away from truth and difficult conversations. And I found that when we're willing to have the courage and take a shot, be brave, that's where the gold is. That's where we might learn something about ourselves, something about the other person. There's a chance for us to go deeper. There's maybe a 10% chance things will get worse and not get better. But I've found there's often a chance for a round two and a round three. And if you stick with people while they get through their emotions, and if they'll stick with you while you get over yours, then you come out stronger. So just like I'm a fan of self-awareness, I'm a fan of real communication and sharing what's actually happening and taking those kinds of risks. Someone asked me yesterday about risk assessment and like how to decide what's too much and what's not enough, because he was quite risk averse. And I said, humans are idiots when it comes to risk. We'll take risks with no upside, like not wearing a seatbelt or not wearing a helmet and driving a motorcycle or smoking nicotine. Like, we'll take risks like that. But tell your partner that you made out with somebody a year ago at a Christmas party? Oh, no, that's too risky. Can't do that. And I disagree. I think it's riskier to not tell it. So there's my mini treatise. Is it treatise? Is that a word?
Maybe. We're using some big words here.
I've been using some words this last month that I've never used before. I don't know where they're coming from. But
yeah, I'm going through a process of learning some new things just from a... Anyway, but we won't get into it. David?
Well, let me just... If people want to up their EQ, their emotional intelligence, and increase their self-awareness and speak more of what's real, Mouse in the Room, you can find it on Amazon, $12.95. And I think particularly if you've got a partner or kids, it could be gold for everybody to read it. So you'll have a common language and go from here to up here in terms of authenticity. I'm not saying it'll always be easier, but I think it's easier than not talking about it in the long run.
We'll include that down in the links. David, I was going to ask one of my last questions, but there's one more question I want to ask that when I get someone who has number one coach in the world on their bio, and I'm a coach, I consider there to be value in coaching. But what I'd love to ask is almost my last question is, what is the value of coaching? What does coaching bring to the table for people? What are your thoughts on that? And then there's a couple of things I want to ask before we wrap up. Why coaching?
Firstly, I do not call myself the number one coach in the world, to clarify. At one time...
with the whole conversation about arrogance, did we have to...
at one time, someone pointed out to me that it seemed I was the largest provider to the coaching industry in the world. And that felt worth mentioning because I'm proud of it. Again, you're throwing in these really big questions that I don't have the time to answer. The short version is, when I'm working with a coach, I'm going to show up in a completely different way for my business and for my life. I'm going to put my attention on the stuff I want to change, and I'm going to get into action in a different way. If my coach has some suggestions and ideas that I hadn't thought of, that's pure bonus. Same with pickleball. I want to get better at pickleball. I can take 5 years trying to work it out on my own, or I can get someone who's been through it. And there's a video on YouTube that I just launched in the last month, which is something like the 5 unexpected benefits of a business coach. So if anyone wants to look that up, they can go and find it. It's obviously a much richer conversation, but there's my short answer.
Very good. David, how can people connect with you? If someone says, hey, I'd like to connect with David, get more info, get a coaching session, how can they do that?
Thank you. Well, there's a bunch of free stuff on my site. I send out a couple of videos once a week. So you can go and subscribe at focus.ceo. It's not .com. I actually got the .ceo extension. So you're welcome to that. If you're interested in working with me one-on-one and you're a business owner who's already up and running, successful, making revenue, and you care about more than making more money, because we can start there, but that's not where we're going to finish, you're welcome to apply for a coaching session. And the same site, focus.ceo. And something I mentioned to you earlier, Tim, that I've been experimenting with, I used to just charge a flat fee. It was $2,000 a month, no matter where you're at in your business. And I realized recently that some people, if you're not earning $250,000 a year in revenue yet, I probably wouldn't recommend you pay $2,000 a month to a coach. I'd say go get a cheaper coach. So I've just started experimenting with a sliding scale. And so instead of charging a flat $2,000, I'll charge you somewhere between $300 and $2,000 if your business isn't at the point where it makes sense to pay my full fee. And the way to do that is go to focus.ceo, apply for the coaching program. It doesn't commit you to anything or me to anything. But you'll then get access to my intake form, which will have you spend 10 minutes really thinking about what you want out of your business and your life and where your roadblocks are. It's gold, even if we never spoke. It's a great intake form. And then it'll take you straight to my calendar to book a 15-minute call. Just make sure you mention in the form, Seek, Go, Create, and sliding scale so that I know that it was from this podcast and I know to honor that offer. And if we both agree that I can help you, we think that that's likely, we'll pick a number that feels good for both of us and we'll get started.
Very good. Thanks for that, David. We are Seek, Go, Create here. Those three words, David. My final question, I always say this, I'm either going to ask you to pick one of those three words or force you, whichever you want to, however your personality wants to look at it.
Create.
Seek. And why?
I think that's the nature of coaching. I think we're creating. We can just go in default mode and respond to the world, but we have willpower. We have something that most other animals don't have. You have the ability to create. What do you want your life to look like? What do you want your relationship to look like? What do you want your body to be? And I love that game. So I choose create.
David, thank you for this conversation. I've enjoyed it. It's been very rich. And I think it teased so many deeper things that we could have talked about, but I've enjoyed it. Thanks for listening in here at Seek, Go, Create. We have new episodes every Monday. We release on YouTube and all the podcast platforms. If you would like to support what we're doing here, I invite you to go to seekgocreate.com/support. You could actually contribute comments there, or you could contribute financially. We welcome that. So go take a look at seekgocreate.com/support. We're going to include all of David's coordinates and what he mentioned down in the notes. So go check out all of that. I recommend you take him up on a conversation. And to me, it seems healthy just to even go through his intake form just to get the thought process. I think that would be extremely healthy. So I appreciate David being here. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, continue being all that you were created to be.